Clementine Hunter on the Melrose Plantation, what was formerly the Melrose Plantation, and to record some of the impressions that have been made concerning my visit with Monsieur Francois Mignon and Mrs. R.G. Williams, who has taken an interest in Monsieur Mignon since he has lost his sight and partially his health, and in the promotion of Clementine Hunter as a local painter. Mrs. Hunter says that she was born in 1886 in this particular part of Louisiana, which is considered northern, in the vicinity of Natchitoches, and the area of the Melrose Plantation, which has a very rich history of being in what is referred to as mulatto country. It appears that this house, having had a history dating back to 1750, or plantation, with the uniqueness of having several houses that were designed in a fashion after houses Africa, one specifically referred to as the Africa House, in which a large overhanging roof provides for a gallery which could be interpreted as a kind of porch around the entirety of the house, the body of the house being in the center on a lower and upper level, provides the living room at the lower level and what could be considered bedroom space or family room at the very top. It is a unique design in that this specific house is not to be found in any other place in the United States. It's very definitely inspired by African architecture. And just to the right of this particular house, if one is looking due west, is the Yucca House. And it is the place where Francois Mignon lived for a number of years. And it is here that one sees the true nature of a kind of forced architectural style of this King River region. By that I mean the use of native logs, possibly fibers, something of that nature, as a foundation for building, and inserting in between these logs a plaster of a sort that is made from red mud and Spanish moss. Now this mixture requires a certain kind of skill which was known only, I'm told, by certain mulattoes who learned the trade of constructing houses in this fashion and became well known throughout the region. And as one drives throughout the countryside, we can still see old remnants of architecture, which, of course, carried out in this style. And I said something earlier about this being mulatto country. The mulattoes are still here. They're still, to a certain extent, somewhat separated. They don't seemingly mix that well with the local whites or the blacks, even though they live in and out in the same community. But there's a kind of specialness about the mulatto in his proud attitude of being, in many cases, from the very beginning, free peoples of color. Their fathers, in many cases, were Frenchmen, and in some cases, when they were not commonly, when they, their fathers were not commonly married to their mothers, this specifically in the 18th and early 19th century, their fathers still had a sense of support or caring for their offspring, and provided them not only with education, but in many cases with substantial amount of land and wealth. And so it is that Melrose Plantation, which was at one time in the hands of the mulatto family, very much like many of the stately mansions in the vicinity of Royal Street, New Orleans, would have the same label of having belonged to a mulatto family. If I am permitted to go back for a moment to the architectural style of Melrose Plantation, one sees in the Melrose House itself the evolution of an architectural form in America which predates the antebellum style so common throughout the South, which was a recapturing in a strange way of the classical revival, the Georgian, and many other influences from Europe all combined to make one style that we normally refer to as the antebellum architectural style peculiar to the South. And so much of what we see in Melrose is possibly the prototype of the antebellum style, which later become so widespread throughout the Mississippi region, up and down the Mississippi River, into certain parts of the state of Mississippi, and even as far east as Mobile. And to a certain extent, one finds variation on this particular theme in the architectural facade of buildings such as Belmead Plantation, the Fourway of Nashville, and the Hermitage, the home of Andrew Jackson, and the vicinity of Nashville as well. So, if I am permitted to digress for a moment and go back to Euchre House, where we have this strange combination of earth, Spanish moss, and wood. In addition to that, we also have some brickwork here and there, specifically the chimneys that are located on each end of the house, and this massive kind of overhanging roof, which gives a peculiar taste and picturesqueness to the architectural structure, very much akin to houses that one might see today in Ghana, specifically, and possibly even in some parts of Nigeria. But it is interesting to see the use of the clay, which is an obvious African influence. Clay that has not been baked, but that which has been used in a way to take on a kind of uniqueness to the area. And it is a house which was built as early as the 18th century and is well preserved today against all of the moisture, the rain, the flooding of the King River, and is still functional and carries out the purpose for which it was intended and designed at that time. Well, if one goes directly east of the African house, he comes into contact with the Ghana house, which is a very interesting architectural structure. I've been told by Monsieur Mignon that the Ghana house at one time contained the murals of Clementine Hunter, just as the African house now contains these murals. The interior of the upstairs, as I moved up the stairs, I was impressed by the beauty of the brickwork in the African house. It was something, in a sense, like an antique facade that was intended to be antique, and yet we know all of these things were functional, they had been used. I'm not able to tell specifically what kind of wood was always used, as some restoration has been done, but a good guess would be that much of the wood is cypress, and some of it, of course, would be the native pine that one finds in Louisiana. And so I'm told that the Africa House was also erected in 1750 by a free woman of color by the name of Maria Theresa. And it was an original, just as the Yucca House, original part of the Melrose Plantation home that was built by Marie Therese, who was born in the Congo. Now, the Melrose House proper takes on, which I've described as having some of the precedent architecture for the antebellum style itself, was not constructed until around 1833. And it was built by Louis Mettois, Jr., whose name lives on in this area, in the personage of people who work and live in the community. And one scans the telephone directory in the city of Natchitoches, he finds many, many Mettois, black and white. I suppose they would not like to be referred to as black, but by the standards of American sociological classifications, even though they are mulattoes, they obviously would be black. This concept of a mulatto is a person who has African, Indian, and French blood, and Clementine Hunter, who tells about her upbringing and bringing up in this part of the country, talks about her people as being from another nation. And she says with great certainty that she didn't know anything about speaking the American language until she married her husband, who taught her to speak American. She says that she spoke Creole. And she also tells of her husband's name was Emmanuel Hunter. And she also tells of the experiences of growing up on the plantation, picking cotton, and how she became interested in painting, and how it is that today people come from far and near and buy her paintings. And she say, people just comes here and buys my paintings, and I don't never know what happens after that or where they go. Well, this is typical of her reaction when people ask her questions about how she got involved in painting, what she remembers about the old plantation, and how it is that she came to paint the very handsome paintings that adorn the interior of the upstairs of the Africa House at this time. And she gives the account that she probably started painting some 30 or 35 years ago. And she says that when she was living there at Melrose, in the house that was at one time referred to as Clement's house, she worked for Mrs. Kemmy Henry, who was a well-known lady of culture in the region, who encouraged people to come to live there for periods of time, specifically artists, those who showed an interest in writing or painting. And so Clementine says that she became interested in painting by having watched Miss Albert Kinsey from New Orleans come up and paint. And one day she says Miss Kinsey gave her some paints and she just started painting. And she would count that she never painted from images, or she never painted from real life, or tried to copy anything. She said that she always had to make her own thing. And it's interesting to hear her talk of how she got involved in painting, how she selects her materials and her subjects. And she goes on to tell us about where she has exhibited the people who have interviewed her for magazines such as Ebony and others that we've read about. But now I want to get back just for a moment to this very interesting part of the country. The description of the landscape is very level, with the exception of a few hills way down further near Alexandria. It obviously was an impressive place to the French when they came there, really, in 1714, and actually set up the city, or the village of Natchitoches, around 1715, or at least organized it, held a mass there, and this became the first, or the original town of the Louisiana Purchase. And so it is to a great extent considered to be the first town of Louisiana. Now I want to get back to this African girl who was a slave at one time, who built Yucca and the African house, like I said, around 1750. She, Maria Teresa, was born in the Congo, and she was given her freedom by her white mistress, and was given the plantation by the then ruling French crown. Now this plantation consisted of hundreds and hundreds of acres of land, and it is rich, fertile, beautiful black soil that grows cotton as tall almost as a man, and is obviously rich in minerals and timber as well. As one drives up and down the road, which winds around the bend of the King River, one can almost recount history in those days, the blacks clearing the forest, making it an emancipated land for crops. And so much of this we find on the now Melrose Plantation, which was at one time a part of the Yucca house region. Maria Teresa built these two structures, the one referred to as the African house, the other referred to as the house. And both were designed and fashioned, as she recalled her first home in the Congo. Now, I don't know I'd refer to these houses as having influences from Africa, as having influence from Ghana and other such places. And I think they're very typical of the kinds of houses that one sees in the rainforest in Africa. So they were designed to allow the rain, tremendous amount of water, which falls, and I've been down on several occasions just in the last day or so here, allowing the water to fall off the roof and be serviceable for the gardens. And there were beautiful gardens around both Yucca House and African House. And then when the Melrose Plantation was built by Monsieur Metoyer, it of course had its beautiful gardens as well, the ancient oaks that must be three or more hundred years old or still there and thriving, the beautiful moss and fern growing all over. Well, I don't know if there's too much more that I can say about the house other than showing me in slide form some of the descriptions that I've been trying to recount verbally. But it is a most interesting place with the kind of design that one can relate to the actual experience of actually transforming a useful and serviceable part of African architecture into a meaningful statement which serves the needs of colonial America. And now I want to describe for you in more detail the construction of a Yoruba house that I saw in progress when I was in Nigeria, in Yoruba land, in 1970. And it strikes me as being very close to the kind of construction that must have gone into the making of Yoruba house. Not the African house, which is basically bricks and wood, but in Yoruba house, which has the characteristics of the what I would refer to as the traditional mud houses of Yoruba country. Now, the traditional building method there consists of doing what we call puddling the mud with water by digging a hole in the ground. And when a certain mixture of what might be referred to as the kind of consistency that one wishes to have is formed from this red mud and any of the other residue which may be in the area, including some straw. And here again, I think the idea of substituting the Spanish moss for straw and things like that, which may be very peculiar to this particular African style, they then laid the mud out in a plan which outlined the floor of the building, showing the doorways, the windows, and what have you, where this kind of construction would take place. In many cases, the mud was thick, and from this they would force a kind of brick which they allowed to be dried for a period of time, and place it one upon the other until a structure of a sort was obtained, which was at least 12 to 15 inches thick, and depending on the importance of the building, it might be as much as 4 or 5 feet thick. The palace of the King of Benin, which of course is not in Yoruba country, has very, very thick walls. And so one finds in many places the wood projecting out through the mud structure, just as is seen in the Yucca House structure here, the Melrose Foundation, and a kind of fluting of a sort is very often observed to keep the surface from being completely smooth, and also to add some decorative quality as well as a functional aspect of that building plan. In some cases, there must have been some polishing that took place as far as the construction, the final aspect of construction of the Yorba house. One does not notice any special polishing on the yucca structure. The slide that shows the detail of it gives a very good idea as to the grain, the texture of the clay that was used. I'm not certain that the clay is from the immediate area, as most of the land that I observed seemed to have had a richness which was more like rich earth soil that would be used in farming more than the kind of clay soil which had been influenced by years of residual leaks from iron deposits, which of course would make the clay red. But I thought it was important to relate that particular experience to a kind of structure that I have witnessed being done in Yoruba country, one very much like that one sees in the facade of the Yucca house on Melrose Plantation. I've also been told that this particular style is not peculiar to Ghana or to Nigeria, places like that, but in the region of old Mali and the Songhai Empire, and as well as in the regions of old Ghana, one would find structures made of mud just as they are to be found today in places such as Mali and Ghana. Timbuktu, for example, one can still find these massive structures marked in utilitarian forms, and as well as those that are to be found in the Ivory Coast. I'm well aware of the fact that it is not totally safe to make all of these comparisons without actual documentation and without the kind of research to prove all the assumptions that have been made about stylizations, specifically some that I've referred to here. But on the basis of the survivors, and this is a rich area of African survivors, it can be seen not only in the architecture, but in the art of the people of this region. The wrought iron, which of course is seen here in New Orleans, in Mobile, in the far north is Charleston, South Carolina. These works, obviously, are evidence of the fact that these African survivors were common in early colonial days, and this is unfortunate and to the discredit of American culture, as well as the annals of history, that these works have been lost and were not properly documented, and that it is only in recent years that we have attuned ourselves to the worth and value of this very important aspect of American culture. One, however, must give credit to that venerable Afro-American scholar, James A. Porter, and to his contemporaries, James Buchanan, Harry Locke, and later Cedric Dover, who delved into the meaning of these survivors, Dover being one to document it photographically and to record the importance of the architectural styles that were common among the mulattoes of this region in his book called Modern Negro Art. American Negro Art. It was published in 1960. And so we hope that this is the beginning, or I should say the continuation, of a kind of valid research which will help us to dig more into the past and see common relationship with the architectural styles, the painting styles, and the styles of modern art that have survived and have become common sights that we do not notice and obviously could contribute so very much to our own cultural background.